Welcome to Little Listener's Lounge, your special corner for discovering the wonders of kids podcasts. I'm Dan Dews, the producer of the kids podcast by Kids for Kids Storytime. And with me is the innovative Meredith Kelly, the brains behind Storytopia, the ideal podcast app tailored for kids.
Together, we're on a mission to illuminate the vibrant universe of children's podcasts. Our goal? To honor and spotlight the creativity and commitment that goes into these mesmerizing audio experiences. From snappy excerpts to in-depth interviews and a peek behind the curtain, we're here to serve up a slice of the finest in kids' podcasts. Today, we're joined by Mick Sullivan, the host and creator of The Past and the Curious. What is The Past and the Curious? Let's take a listen.
For hundreds of years, the Pueblo people of New Mexico grew chili peppers. Some were hot, some were hotter. Some might resemble chilies that you might find today. But truthfully, there was a vast difference in taste, shape, durability, and spiciness from town to town and crop to crop and tongue to tongue. Anyone who's ever eaten a chili knows that you don't want to roll the dice. It's better that you have a fair idea of what you're putting into your mouth. Otherwise, you might wind up with something hotter than a sunburnt scorpion on a desert cactus at high noon in June. Thankfully, at the turn of the 1900s, along came a man with a chili pepper obsession and a brilliant mind to change farming and spicy foods forever.
Mick, in a nutshell, how would you describe this show?
The Past and the Curious is it's really kind of a romp through history. I spend each episode telling two different stories that relate thematically, and it's really important to showcase people that aren't jumping off the pages in the history books but are largely more interesting than some of the people that are in the history books. And I always try to do it with a little bit of fun, a little bit of humor, and certainly some honesty when it comes to historical events and, you know, the cultures that we deal with.
Mick, you and I have talked about this, so I kind of know what your inspiration was, but little listeners and maybe even Past and the Curious listeners might not know what inspired you to start the podcast. Can you share that with us?
Yeah, of course. My day job, I work at a history museum in Louisville, Kentucky, called the Fraser History Museum. And for years, I was in charge of out-of-school time learning, which, you know, was summer camps and that sort of programming. And I got really into, you know, learning about these stories and trying to figure out how to frame them and make them interesting and make them matter to young people. And would do that in person, which was a lot of fun, but it was also a lot of work. And I realized I'm only letting that work live one time, you know? And I had developed this approach to presenting, you know, stories or you know, whatever it was. And so I was looking for a way to reach more people with the work that I had done. And I think, you know, the unique voice that I had kind of developed around that. And luckily, as a musician, I had some audio production skills. So I put those two things together and rolled out with The Past and the Curious way back in 2016.
Wow, you're an OG.
Mick, I'm sure a huge amount of work goes into crafting each episode. Can you walk us through the process from coming up with the idea until the point where we can all hear it?
I work in all this time and, you know, the moderate amount of success that I would count as having. I do this on my own. Like, it's a one person show. So I don't generate the content that, you know, other shows that have budgets and, you know, teams and financial backing do. It's really still a labor of love. So it takes time. I release about one episode a month. And that's about how long it takes to create, right? So I spend time in the research process. I spend time in the writing process, revision, and then into production. And my cycle is about a month.
I'm so curious about how you come up with ideas. But first, would you share one of your most memorable episodes?
Because of the podcast, I've been able to publish a few books. And the first one was about this very peculiar event that happened in my neck of the woods. It was called the Kentucky Meat Shower of 1876. Mm-hmm. This very strange occurrence that is still inexplicable today. And so, you know, the book was great. I released it in 2019. It was so much fun to put together. And I do a live reading every year on the anniversary of the event, which was March 3rd. That's always really well attended and super fun. And of course, I did an episode when the book came out. But, you know, that such is the nature of these things is that, you know, it's a pretty specific event. And as things happen, you know, research happens in the world or new things come to light, as one of the more visible figures related to this weird story find out about it, people come to me. And so a man named Frank Reiser, who is a professor in New York, and he collects microscopic slides, found a new specimen of the Kentucky meat showers. The first new, it had been believed that only one existed for the last 100 and something years, and a new one was found. And of all places, he found it and purchased it from eBay. But it's really, really, really well documented. And he knows how to research those documents because, you know, he's both, you know, used to pouring through archives and also, you know, understands how science in the 1800s worked. So I interviewed him. I had a great time talking to him, and I built a new episode about it just about a month and a half ago, which was revisiting. You know, it's like, hey, new stuff has come to light, and I was excited to share it, and I think the audience was as well.
Let's give it a listen.
The slide was on eBay, and it was advertised as the Kentucky meteor shower, which makes sense. I mean, meteor showers happen and you collect the meteors and they're valuable. People want those. They're highly desirable.
But before making the purchase, Frank wanted to know more about this meteor shower in Kentucky from 1876. So he started doing some research for details of when and where it might be from. As you might have guessed, it wasn't from a meteor shower at all.
Intriguing. Mick, I'm a huge fan of history, but the traditional history books are frequently about things like kings, queens, great battles, which is all a bit, I find, tedious, and there's so much more to discover. There's many other ways to frame history. What is your approach?
People. People are the way to frame history in my mind. It's like, you have a life, I have a life, Meredith has a life. We all see and experience different things, and we're going to impact different people, and different people are going to impact us. And it's always been that way. And in a lot of cases, the people who push change or do something extraordinary are just regular people who are, you know, driven to do something. And those are the stories that I tend to look for. I mean, I certainly do episodes about, you know, royalty and, you know, politicians or, you know, other people that, you know, Carnegie, who made a huge impact in the world. But it's always the stories that always connect with me are the ones that are just like, well, I could have met that person, or that, you know, that's just a normal person who did something awesome. They walked across the country because they wanted to, or, you know, it's so much easier to find a story and connect with a person if you can, in some way, you know, identify with them as a fellow human, not as some, like, you know, person on a pedestal.
I would imagine that, you know, some of the stories you want to share are maybe not so kid friendly. How do you approach, like, making the topic more kid appropriate?
Yeah, I struggle with that a lot, but I do get a lot of really great feedback from parents, which I really appreciate, because I do want to approach things honestly, and I do want people, you know, to have the context. The ultimate thing, the thing that I always tell myself, is don't talk down to kids. Like, the facts are the facts, right? I mean, there are plenty of people that I feature who were enslaved. There are plenty of moments because of war that are gruesome or horrifying or sad. But through it all, there's still people at the center of it who are able to navigate that or overcome, or else, you know, push for change for people subsequent generations beyond that. I don't try to shy away from it, but I do, you know, the language that I use, you know, it's never anything gruesome. It's never anything offensive, but I'm not going to pretend that those things didn't happen for children.
Yeah. What do you say your target, like, audience age is?
You know, it's weird. It's all over the board, because I hear from parents and I meet people all the time. In my mind, it's third, fourth, fifth, sixth grade sort of range.
Yeah.
But, and that's kind of how I wrote the more recent book.
Yeah.
But, you know, I talk to parents whose kids are in middle school, or they, you know, they started listening and they're in high school and they still listen. But I also talk to people mm-hmm. Parents whose children are in kindergarten and they listen to the show. So, mm-hmm. you know, I think it depends on the show and like, or it depends on the kid. Like,
yeah,
kids,
yeah.
Kids have proclivities. Like, what are you interested in? I know like my kids are starting to show an interest in history and, yeah. I don't think that other kids are necessarily at that point. It just depends on what you like, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dinosaurs, yeah. History, the whole, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's all over. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I respect kids first and foremost. And so I think that's an important thing, especially with something like history.
Awesome.
Well, I think it's time for another clip.
And in 1909, Mr. Weston looked back on a career of walking that would fill any other peripatetic person with pride. But he was not satisfied. There was something left to conquer, the American continent itself. He wanted to cross the whole thing on foot, in a time before most places had paved roads, mind you. So on his 70th birthday, he left New York City with a goal to make it to San Francisco on a 4,000-mile trek, and he wanted to do it in 100 days. Every step of the way, people watched as he passed. Some followed along for a while. The press covered him daily. And for most of the journey, it looked like he might make it. But he did not. It took him 104 days. Can you believe it? So close, yet so far away.
Mick, am I correct in saying this is one of your favorite episodes?
Yeah, this is. And for a number of reasons, I alluded to this at the beginning. This was not an episode that I planned on doing. I was not working on an episode about walking, because what a thrilling subject, right? Walking. But as it turned out, I stumbled on not one, not two, not three, but four, actually more than four, probably six or seven different stories that kind of wrap up. So it turned into two episodes, and it starts, the first part of the walking series starts with the stories of two men who were just kind of wanderers in the 1800s. And one of them was up around Massachusetts. He was known as Leatherman. And he just made this circuit like every, I forget how many days, but you know, say it's like 35 days or something. And he'd just show up back in your town 35 days later. And he lived for years and years, and people just came to know him. And that was just such a fascinating thing. And then it led into these stories of people who were competitive walkers, which was a big thing. Like, I mean, they would sell out fairgrounds or, you know, auditoriums in New York City or London with people who would walk, you know, just a short distance back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, but they would do it nonstop, or, you know, they would have to walk a mile every hour. You know, I mean, it was just bananas. And they would, you know, people would come and cheer and bet and do all this sort of stuff. And it kind of had a swan song. So that's where it ends, with the man there trying to walk across the country. That was into the 1900s. But then, you know, the last episode, or the last story in the four part, these two guys, one in Spain and one in England, who were walkers and would just pick things up as they walked. I'm sorry, it was France and England. And they would pick things up as they walked. And they both built homes from the things that they collected over, you know, decades of doing this. And so, you know, yeah, it's great, right? Like, it's so fascinating. Like, you can imagine how that would just spark an imagination, right? Or just to wonder, you know, what it was like to literally walk in their shoes, right? So, you know, those are the stories that, like, you don't get, but I feel like there's a lot of value in knowing them, in knowing the resourcefulness of the two guys, but also, like, who would have thought that baseball replaced walking as like one of the national pastimes.
Is there something surprising, or are there any sort of story ideas that have come from your audience, or, you know, kids, caregivers that have surprised you or delighted you?
Yeah, that happens a lot. Yeah. Actually, someone that I met in person, as it turned out, she had roots in Kentucky and was visiting the museum, told me about this man who mixed chemicals to try and spark a rain during a drought in California. And that was a really fun episode. And actually, the first clip that we did about Fabian Garcia, who was a Mexican-American agriculturalist, the other story there came from a listener who had read a book about this man named Elliot Michener, he was imprisoned on Alcatraz Island and became a gardener there and was like really found something magical in gardening. And that's what his life was dedicated to during that time and after. It was a really cool story.
That's awesome. Wow. Okay. I'm going to go back and listen to that one.
It's a good one.
Well, Mick, I haven't listened to every single episode yet, but what seems to be a recurring theme to me is underpants. Would I be wrong in saying that?
You would not. You would not. Yeah. Well, I published a book about a year, maybe 2 years ago, I don't know, I lose track, called I See Lincoln's Underpants. And so it was largely a growth out of this podcast where it was like, I had found all of these great stories. Ultimately, I found 16 that became chapters in this book. And they were each, you know, focused, you know, mostly biographical on a person, covering their life and the context of, you know, their time in history. But these 16 were chosen because I also found moments where their underwear also played a role either in their lives or in history, or in most cases, both. And some of them are, you know, logical, like Amelia Bloomer, who is now we call Bloomers, you know, Bloomers. That, which was, she was a big figure in women's dress reform. There's Annette Kellerman, who invented the modern day swimsuit, and there's underwear involved in that too. But sometimes it's silly, like the time that Abraham Lincoln's pants, he had a wardrobe malfunction, as it were, and people saw his underwear. And so that was the name of the book. It's called I See Lincoln's Underpants.
I don't have it here because I loaned it out, but I have a copy of that book.
I know. I've seen a picture of you with it. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Well, Mick, it's been wonderful chatting with you. Thank you for sharing your time with us today. We'll wrap up with your last soundbite.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. This is from the underwear series.
Awesome.
It's been a pleasure chatting with you. Bye. Bye, Mick.
Thanks, Matt.
Imagine being awoken by your mother in the dim darkness of an early morning. With no explanation and no chance to cover your wrinkled dressing gown, you're taken to a room full of prim and proper men with titles like Lord Cunningham and Archbishop of Canterbury. Blinking your groggy eyes, wearing only your underclothes, and wondering if you're dreaming, you hear the most important news of your life. What might sound like some kind of weird Knickers-related nightmare was real life for Victoria of England. The poor young lady was in her underwear when she found out that she would be the queen. It was an overwhelming thing to hear at the crack of dawn. The 18-year-old was suddenly in control of the British Empire, the most powerful empire in the world. Considering this, they could have given her time to get dressed, maybe even have a cup of coffee.